Hello, my friends, and welcome to End of Life University Podcast, where we share real talk about life and death. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Wyatt. Thanks for joining me here today. This is episode number 333, and we're right at the beginning of the new year, 2022. Today is a solo episode, and I'll be sharing my thoughts on Swedish death cleaning, which is something I'm engaging in right now myself as part of my resolutions for this new year. But I have a few announcements before we start on that topic. So first, I want to let you know about a symposium that's coming up at the end of this month. It's the second annual Symposium on Death and Bereavement Studies hosted by Terry Daniel. It takes place on Sunday, January 30th, and starts at 9 a.m. Pacific Time, noon Eastern Time. And the theme for the symposium is positive and negative religious coping. And Terry writes, in this rare learning environment, you'll work interactively with some of today's most respected leaders in death and bereavement studies. This will be a day of unique exploratory content that is not often addressed in traditional counseling or support group settings. The program is designed for mental health, end-of-life, and spiritual care professionals, but is also suitable for bereaved individuals. It includes 6 continuing education credit hours for social workers, nurses, psychologists, counselors, and more. And I will leave a link to register for the symposium on the show notes. There is a fee to attend, and it's a higher fee if you want the continuing education credits as well. So you'll find the link to learn more about the symposium and register at eolupodcast.com and look for episode number 333, and you'll see the link there so you can find out more about the symposium. I'm really excited to be part of it and to be speaking there. I'm going to talk about when hope is harmful. So, and then I'm also taking place in a panel discussion. So it's just a one-day symposium, but I think it's going to be very powerful. So I hope you'll join us there. I also want to thank my new supporters on my page at Patreon, Sue Skeets and Lucy Carl. I hope I pronounced your last name correctly, Sue. Sorry, my apologies if I didn't. And then also thank Diane Button for upping the amount of her annual pledge. We're doing really well on donations through Patreon and other forms of donation. So we now have only 7 more to go before we reach the goal for providing transcripts for every podcast episode. So we're getting really close now, and I'm hopeful that within a couple of weeks we'll be there and I can start paying to have transcripts done for every episode. So thanks to Sue, Lucy, and Diane today, and thanks also to everyone who's been making contributions on my Patreon page for the last few years. It's really helpful to me, and I appreciate you so very much. I did want to share a little bit, if anyone is new here, about this podcast, just because you may not be familiar with me or what I talk about here. I am a retired hospice physician, but also a family practice physician, so I've done both specialties throughout my career. I retired early to start writing books about end-of-life issues, and then in 2013, I started doing interviews with people who work in various areas of the end-of-life community, and I called it End-of-Life University, partly because I was trying to educate myself. I had a lot of knowledge about hospice and the dying process, but I realized when my mother died that year, 2013, that I didn't know anything about funeral planning, about burial options. There were so many things I didn't know anything about at that time, and I realized, hey, I can start just interviewing people and asking them questions about what they do and what their work is about. And I initially published them on my website thinking maybe other people would like to hear these conversations, and people who are nervous about death and dying and have difficulty talking about it can at least sit and listen to our conversations. So I started doing all these interviews back in 2013, and 2 years later, I discovered podcasts and realized, oh, that's what this is. This is a podcast. So I put it up on Apple Podcasts at that time, and I've been going strong ever since with one episode every week for all these years, but I love doing it. I really enjoy how much I get to learn, the amazing people I have the opportunity to meet, and I really like sharing this content with you. So this is an eclectic podcast. I talk with people who do all sorts of work and in many different areas. That's what fascinates me and what I find fun. So I don't really focus in on any particular topic. And I'm always interested in being introduced to people who might be a good guest for the podcast. So feel free to make suggestions to me if you know someone out there that you think would be great for me to interview. I love that. I also enjoy getting your feedback about the podcast, and I have just a few comments I wanted to share with you today that have come in just the last week. Robert H. wrote to me, "You are a blessing to the entire end-of-life community, a sane voice in a somewhat insane world." And I love that Robert mentioned that because I strive for that. I strive to be a person with equanimity and calmness, and to make sure I convey that through every interview I do, the questions I ask, the comments I make, that it's really important to have a balanced approach to both life and death. And for me, it's also a spiritual approach, my own particular spirituality, but I try to convey that through the words that I speak in these podcast episodes. So thank you, Robert, for noticing and appreciate that. Mike D. wrote to me, who is currently reading my book, Seven Lessons for Living from the Dying, and said, "Your eloquent insight regarding the number of issues we deal with if we're fortunate enough to live a long life is inspiring and requires careful, thoughtful consideration." So thank you, Mike. I'm so glad you're reading the book and that you're finding it of value. And then lastly, Jennifer B. wrote to say, "I want to express to you how much I appreciate the work you're doing with your podcast and providing the links and resources in the email. I'm in the process of creating a death doula practice, and your thorough work is very helpful. I want to thank you for all that you're creating and sharing. I'm relying on you as an honest, deep, and knowledgeable expert in this arena." So thank you for that, Jennifer. But honestly, I feel I'm as much a student as anyone else. I invite people on who teach me so many things. And through the years of doing this podcast, I've really expanded my own consciousness around death and dying, around what really matters in how we live, and then even about the options that are available to us in later life and as we approach the end of our lives. And having done these interviews has really given me so much greater depth and wisdom for my own life. So I am nothing but grateful for all of the guests who've been willing to come on here and teach me what they know, and for all of you out there who are listening. So if you'd like to give me feedback or write to me, you can connect with me in various ways. You can send an email to karen@karenwyattmd.com. If you're on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, you can find me there. And there will be links on the show notes again, eolupodcast.com, if you want to connect with me through social media. So thank you to everyone who's writing. Thanks for everyone for your financial support. I appreciate it so very, very much. And I'm going to move on now to the topic I wanted to discuss with you. I think this will be a fairly short episode, but I just wanted to talk to you a little bit about the idea of Swedish death cleaning. And the idea originally came from a book titled The Gentle Art of Swedish Death Cleaning: How to Free Yourself and Your Family from a Lifetime of Clutter, written by Margareta Magnusson. And she is writing about the practice, I'm not sure I can pronounce this correctly in Swedish, dostadning, which means literally death cleaning. And it's a custom in Sweden, apparently, for older people in their families to get together and begin cleaning out the elderly person's home and giving items away and deciding where they belong now and as that person moves forward in their life. And I really love this idea. One person called it minimalism for seniors. And I think the idea is beginning to catch on here as many of us are embracing this idea that less is more and are beginning to chafe at the number of possessions that we have and really the burden of owning so many things and maintaining so many possessions that we don't use very often. And so I really like this concept of decluttering your home before you die so that your loved ones are less burdened. That means a lot to me too. And I became interested in that after the death of my own mother back in 2013, when I had to clean her house out because we had a buyer and I had 2 weeks before the sale was to take place in order to clean her house. So I spent that time day after day, night and day, going through everything in her house and deciding what to do with it and where to take it. I had no time to ponder any of the items that were there. It was a very rushed process in a way that was good because I could have gotten lost and buried in all the items that were there. My mom had lived in that house, I would say, for 60 years and had really never done any of this really decluttering or deep cleaning. So every square inch of the house, every cabinet, every little nook and cranny was stuffed with things that she owned that I had to sort through and make decisions about. And so obviously, and I know many of you have been through the same thing with your parents, and you know how challenging and painful it can be to do that kind of cleaning. Even though my mom did do a little bit of death cleaning, I guess, before she died, because she did give some of her special items away to people that she cared about. And every time I would visit her, I remember she would ask me, "Why don't you take something? Is there something that you want of mine that you like? Why don't you take it with you?" But the problem is, I didn't want anything more. I didn't want anything else. I already had everything that I needed. So there wasn't really much in her house that I wanted to keep for myself. So the task became what to do with all of these objects. And I felt a great sadness as I went through all of her possessions, and especially things that I knew she really cherished. And looking at them, you know, a month or so after she died, and realizing that those items were special and had value while she was alive and while she owned them, because she gave them the value that they had. And yet most of them to me had no value. They were not things that I cherished. And these were mostly things that she didn't own when I was growing up. They weren't part of my childhood or part of my life at all. And I felt this sadness of how all of these material possessions we have that we believe somehow are special and that carry our spirit, they begin to fade in their value and their meaning once the person who owned and cherished them dies. And so I felt a sadness about that fact and about dispersing all of these belongings my mom had spent 60 years gathering in her house, all of these things that she accumulated and put together that were part of her identity, who she was and what she loved in her life. And that now through my process of cleaning out her house, all of those things were being scattered in so many different directions, given away to so many different people, primarily to the local thrift store, which actually she left a note saying that's where she wanted her belongings to go. And so I ended up taking most things there so that they would be dispersed to people who needed them, who would cherish them. But there was definitely pain and grieving over that dispersal, that scattering of all of these items that had been a part of my mom and her life. However, at the end of the process, I came away from all of that knowing that my mom wasn't gone. My mom herself, her spirit, her essence, who she was not dispersed. What was dispersed were really material items that didn't have that much significance when you really looked at them, that she easily could have done without them if she had given them away earlier. And so that really helped me when I started to process, how do I give away some of the things that I own but no longer use? And how do I actually detach myself from them and give them away? And this act of cleaning out my mom's house is really the thing that prepared me. Though, as you can see, it's 9 years later and I haven't done my own cleaning yet. I'm just now ready to start it this year. But cleaning mom's house prepared me to be ready to release these items that I have loved and cherished, but that no longer hold that special meaning for me and hold the joy for me, I guess, now. So that's the process I'm beginning right now and what I'm going through. And I wanted to mention, at my mom's house, one thing that was so interesting to me, I found she had a room that she called her junk room. In the junk room, there were bags and bags full of greeting cards that she had received from other people throughout her entire life. I swear, every single birthday card or Christmas card she had ever received from anyone. And at the time she died, shortly before she died, she had actually started sorting through those bags of greeting cards, and she had piles of them. She was using my childhood bedroom to sort through them, so she had piles of greeting cards laid out that she was sorting who they were from, what she was sorting them based on the holiday or the event the cards were for, and who they came from, and what year they were giving to her. And I have to say, that overwhelmed me in a sense, to see that she was like meticulously going through greeting cards that were 50 years old and trying to figure out still at the age of 89, which cards to save, which ones had meaning to her. And so, you know, I had to gather all of them up that she had sorted. And all of those bags became trash bags. All of those cards ended up in the trash. There was no way I could ever look at them or read them. And I realized some of them might actually contain really interesting messages, maybe thoughts that people had expressed to her. Maybe I could have enjoyed reading them. But I had no time for that. There was no time for me to go through those. And I realized she didn't have the time either. I don't know how many weeks at the end of her life she had spent already trying to organize those greeting cards. So that reminded me that I want to prioritize a little bit these possessions that I have and what I do with them and how much time I spend going through them and looking at them, so that I use my time wisely and make the most of the time that I have to spend on this cleaning that I'm going to be doing. I think this is a really good topic for all of us to consider who are working with people around end-of-life issues, because perhaps if we're teaching people about doing their advanced directives, maybe we should include some reminders to do their own death cleaning in their homes and to go through some of their possessions and think about what they would like to do with them. Also, just knowing, not only will it help their loved ones later if they've done some of this cleaning while they're still here, but it will help them, because there's something so refreshing about living a simpler life. And you can ask anyone who loves to go camping. One of the things that we like about camping is that it's so simple. We camp in a little trailer where we have 4 plates, a little bit of silverware, 1 pot, and 1 frying pan. And so we have only the bare minimum of things that we need to prepare food and cook for ourselves. And that's why we love it. We never have to do very many dishes because we don't even own very many dishes in that trailer. We love the simplicity of camping. And so imagine how free you could feel if your own life at home felt simpler in that same way. So I'm sure that a lot of you have probably already done some of this cleaning, and you're maybe not people who hold on to clutter as much as I do, so maybe you don't even need this information, but I did want to encourage you to think about sharing it with people you're working with who are approaching the end of life, and consider how it might be helpful to them and helpful to their loved ones as well. So I'll share with you some of the tips I've picked up as I've been reading about Swedish death cleaning, and I've been reading books and articles about it. The first tip is to involve your loved ones if you're able to, so that you tell them what you're doing and you can actually ask them if there's anything of yours that they would like to have, and maybe even get them to help you. That's not possible for me because none of my family members live close to me now. So this is really going to be on me to go through this cleaning, but I think that's a great idea if you have loved ones close by to include them in the process, and they might have advice or thoughts about what to do with some of the items that you're getting rid of. The next tip is to start with things that are less personal. So most of the people who help others do Swedish death cleaning say, begin with your closets, like your clothing closets, and start going through your clothes and figure out what you actually wear and what you may hang on to that you don't wear. And I have a lot of clothing in that, just under that description of things that I always imagine I might need. Gosh, I might need to dress up for some occasion. I've saved things from when I used to go to work every day, but I don't wear those kind of clothes anymore. I don't go to work every day. And so there are a lot of things I could get rid of and could leave behind in my clothing closet. So they've suggested starting there, then moving on to the kitchen and getting rid of all the excess cookware and utensils and old mismatched plates and cups and things that you don't really use anymore. Then going to any storage areas in the home, storage cabinets that sometimes we stuff a lot of things back in the back of those cabinets and closets that we could go through. Things like bookshelves and our desks and what we have stored there, going through the living room and any little tables or places there where we may have stored things. And then, of course, the garage and other areas where we keep things. I have a whole storage closet in my basement that's full primarily of Christmas decorations. It used to also have Halloween decorations, but I got so many Christmas decorations, the Halloween ones didn't fit in there anymore, so I had to move those to the attic. Now, that's ridiculous. I don't even use all of them, but I love all of them. So that's going to be a challenging closet for me to clean out because there are just so many memories there in that closet. The second tip is to give things away thoughtfully and intentionally. So if you say, if maybe you have a sweater or a blouse that someone you know has always admired and loved, maybe you could give that to them. Or a vase or something else that someone else has loved that you have who might really enjoy keeping that, and it would be a wonderful keepsake for them to have of yours, and maybe they would cherish it and use it even though you no longer use it yourself. So the fourth tip, of course, this is obvious, is to donate or sell as many items as possible. For one thing, because we don't want to throw things into the landfill if there's any possible other use for them. So focus on donating or selling items, but also to do it quickly. After you do the cleaning and you have bags or boxes full of items, it's important to take them somewhere and get them out of your house as quickly as possible before you reconsider and start going through them again and reclaiming some of those items. Next is to do your personal items last, the things that you are the most attached to. And those might be photographs and letters. It might be certain artwork, something someone made for you that is really tender to your heart. Save those for the very last. And many of those items in the beginning might be too painful to release. And so it's perfectly fine to keep them as long as you need to and gradually make decisions about what is really worth holding on to. Many of the authors I read suggested having a box of whatever size you need for mementos, where you put the items that are so special to you that you cannot part with them, and keep them in that box so that you have many special cherished items in the box that you can't imagine ever getting rid of. But you can attach a note to the box at some point for your children that says to them, "You, after I die, you can get rid of this box," because it might be like my mom's greeting cards, something that matters to you so much that you can't get rid of it, but that obviously your children won't want to keep. And so you can leave instructions, which would release them, I think, from some of the guilt and the pain that I felt about giving away and throwing away some of these things that my mom seemed to cling to. The next suggestion was to also declutter and organize your digital assets. So meaning every social media site that you belong to, and maybe leave the sites that you don't really care about and don't want to be part of, but those that you want to continue with, make sure that you've made a list of those sites and your passwords, or that you've designated someone, a family member, who can access your sites and make decisions about what to do with them when you die. And also you can also on many of those social media sites now, you can designate that person's name on the site. And the same goes, of course, for any of your financial records and any of those that are online as well. Listing all of your passwords there, making sure that you've designated a beneficiary for all of them. At the same time, it's a great idea to do updating of your will and your advance directives while you're doing the death cleaning. It's not so much that you're focusing on your death or that you're planning that you're going to die soon, only that being mindful of the fact that we're mortal and we will die someday, we want to have all of these things in order to make it simpler as we do get closer to the end of life. And if it turns out that we need to move to a different living situation, it will be much easier to move if we've already been doing this kind of cleaning for the years before that move comes about. Another suggestion was to keep an active giveaway box in your closet, perhaps, that you fill as you go, so that your mindset is constantly looking for what do I no longer need that I can give away. And also, I've read the suggestion every time you buy something new, you have to give away one item so that you're only replacing you're replacing something you're giving away with the new item, not adding additional items to your list of possessions. So I like that idea and hope to be able to carry that out. And something that I have added to this list that I didn't read in any of the tips, but you all as listeners of this podcast will totally resonate with this idea, that I think we need to have grief rituals around these possessions that we're parting with, that we're scattering and giving away and letting go of. And so I think it's really important for us to acknowledge our grief and to embrace the fact that it's painful at times to give up the things that used to carry so much meaning for us, and to see that change, to see our own values and our feelings change over time. And those memories can be hard to let go of. And So we may need rituals for how do we do that. And maybe, you know, the greeting cards of my mom or, you know, some paper items that we decide to get rid of. Maybe we have a little ceremony where we actually burn some of those items, because burning is a way of like releasing the value and the meaning in those items up to heaven, up to the skies, releasing it to the universe. So the energy that was contained, like in my mom's greeting cards, can be released. It can go back to the universe where it's free and available to spread love to other people. So I like the idea of having a ritual like that, and I will have to give that some thought for myself. And what I might do as a little ritual for some of the things that I'm letting go of. And I wanted to just share with you one last story that came from those weeks when I was cleaning out my mom's house. One of the things that I discovered in a storage area that was up above her stairs that went down into the basement, and I hadn't even really remembered that she had a little storage cubbyhole up there. But I noticed it one day and got a ladder and went up there. And what I found inside were these old Christmas decorations. They were lawn decorations. And I remember back when I was a very little girl, one of my aunts had drawn a picture of a Santa Claus and one of an angel. And she had drawn them, they're very big, like 3 to 4 feet tall. And she had drawn them. She was an artist, and she had drawn these figures. And my grandfather, my mom's father, who was a carpenter, had made cutouts of the Santa Claus and the angel out of particle board in his shop. And then my mom and her sister and my other aunt, who was married to my mom's brother, each got one of the Santa Clauses and the angels, and they had a painting party one day. And I remember all the cousins, we were all there playing while our moms were painting these figures, the Santa and the angel. And so all three of our families had the same lawn decorations. They looked differently because our moms painted them differently. And my mom used to put hers up in our yard every year at Christmas time. They would stand outside in our yard, and then so did my two aunts. So I found them up in that storage cabinet. My mom hadn't put them out for years and years, and I had forgotten completely that they existed. And so I became so emotional and sentimental about those decorations because it brought back memories from such a long time ago. And they were actually very crude. They were particle board. They were hand painted, but by a non-artist, my mom. And so there was nothing that anyone else would think special at all. They were only special for me because of the memories that they contained. And I sat with those for the longest time, not knowing what to do with them. Right away, I knew I would never put those in my yard. I just wouldn't. It's not something that I would want to have, that I would want to store. So I didn't want to keep them. I didn't know anyone who would want them or would want to keep them. But it was so painful for me to imagine giving them away. And I decided I would take them to the thrift store, because in my mind, I created this story that some young family that couldn't afford Christmas decorations would be at the thrift store and see those and think, oh, that's perfect. We could put them in our yard this year. So in one of the last loads I took to the thrift store, and believe me, I made lots of trips there over those few weeks while I was cleaning everything out, but it was probably the last load that I took there. The Santa Claus and the angel were in the back of the car, and so I carried them in, and I put them in the area where you dropped off things, and I gently and carefully put them there and said goodbye to them, and I sent all this love with them, like, oh, whoever ends up with these, I hope that they bring you joy. I hope it's a blessing. So I walked back out to the car and had to turn the car around in the parking lot in order to get out. And I looked back at the thrift store for some reason, And the last thing I saw was one of the workers carrying the Santa Claus and the angel across the parking lot and putting it in the dumpster. And I sat in the car and I just burst into tears and cried. I don't know why I was crying over those little figures, but it was a moment of grief. And in some ways, that became my ritual of truly letting go and also truly understanding impermanence, that nothing lasts and everything changes, and that really much of what we treasure that is material is ephemeral. It's impermanent. It's not meant to last. It's meant to bring us joy for a time, and then we have to let it go. And so the worker at the thrift store helped me do what I couldn't do, which was let them go completely, to disintegrate and become something else energetically. So that was really the final act of cleaning my mom's house and experiencing the true grief of my mom's death and of scattering all of her valuables and her possessions. And I can't say, I mean, I don't want to protect my children from experiencing that, because I think it was really powerful for me to go through the process of cleaning out her possessions. And I will still have plenty of possessions in my home that my children will be able to clean out. But I believe by doing this Swedish death cleaning, I'm going to make life so much better for myself. I'm going to simplify things and make my surroundings more pleasant for me right now, which is going to greatly benefit my life for now and for all of the years that I have that remain. And then it will also benefit my children someday down the road as well. So that's all. I just wanted to talk a little bit about my 2022 New Year's project of Swedish death cleaning, in hopes that maybe some of you will be inspired to do it yourselves, if you haven't already, to do that kind of decluttering, and then also to incorporate it into some of the teaching that you're doing when you're out there talking to people about end-of-life issues. I think it's a really valuable practice that all of us need to cultivate. So, happy New Year. I hope 2022 is a year of blessings and deep meaning and much love for you, no matter what we encounter this year. So until next week, remember that we're here for love. So face your fear, be ready for whatever happens next, and love each and every moment of this impermanent life. Bye-bye.